It is a good day.
It is a good day.
Oh, no, no, no.
Aside,
no.
Well, aside no, from the no, fact no, that no, it's fall.
It is a good day. It is a good
yeah,
day.
Yeah, well, I know why you're grinning.
Yeah, the baseball season ended in a good way last night. Actually, technically on the East Coast this morning.
True. True. Mm-hmm. That is, you know, and having grown up on Central Time, I've been on Eastern Time for the past 17 years. I'm still not used to it. Mm-hmm. It still seems wrong.
And tell me, how did the baseball season end early this morning?
The Houston Astros have won the World Series over the Los Angeles Dodgers.
Who lost?
The Los Angeles Dodgers.
Say that again?
Yeah, you're really enjoying this.
This is good. This is a good thing. By the way, did you see Carlos Correa after last night's game?
I did not.
Carlos Correa, who is one of the many young star players on that team, proposed to his girlfriend on live television. And she said yes.
Well, in some ways, that's not really a fair question. I mean, what's she going to say? No?
And that rock looked like something that would fit, like, cover first base completely, all right? That was one heck of a
ring. The glory of professional athletes making more in their salaries than some country's GDP.
Yes, this is true. This is true. So, yes, I am. By the way, we didn't introduce ourselves. I was having so much fun.
You were excited.
We should be professional in our what is it we do?
Well, there's a first time for everything. You are listening to Upon Further Review with the Podcast Pros. What episode is this?
This is 11.
Episode number 11. So I'm Dr. Soren Fanning, professor of world history here at RMU. And you are?
And I am Dr. Anthony Moretti, associate professor in the School of Communications and Information Systems, more specifically in the Department of Communication. And indeed, this is Episode 11 of Upon Further Review with
the Podcast Profs, and this is our Crime and Punishment
indeed
episode,
which we will get to in a few moments, but I did have to mention and enjoy the fact that the baseball season ended in a celebratory way.
And you know, I have to say, I'm happy mainly because, man, Houston needed a lift after Houston the summer needed, they've had, yeah. And I hope I'm wrong. But if you've seen former President George H. Bush, I don't think he's long for this world.
I agree with you.
Yeah, he's confined to the wheelchair. If you look at his ankles,
it's not looking good. He's 93, right?
93 years old.
Because Jimmy Carter's 94. Am I remembering that
correctly? That's correct.
I think Carter is the older of the two by 1 year. No, and all kidding aside, with the Astros winning and whatnot, I think the challenge now is some of those players have set up a real delicate situation. We won this for the city of Houston. They're our fans. They're our friends.
Sure.
We're remembering them. What happens when the rubber meets the road and it's contract time? We're about to find out how much it really
matters. No. They won for Houston. That's over now.
Oh, that's past tense. I see.
It's past tense. It's okay. Here's your trophy. Celebrate. Congratulations. Now, where's my money? Yeah.
It's a business. It's coming. For what it's worth, the Astros team payroll this year was 17th in Major League Baseball.
Well, which does make me happy. Although
I
will.
Going up?
But I'll say this. Anyone who thinks that sport is for entertainment, understand, it is a business first and foremost.
It is indeed.
Just as Hollywood is, just as television is, so let's have no illusions.
Indeed. So congratulations to the Astros.
Now, indeed. Well done.
My older son is probably at almost this very moment making you quite proud without you knowing it.
Oh, dear.
Yes. So he informs me that for one of the classes he is taking here, he is doing an essay and then a speech on the Electoral College.
Very nice.
Yes. And it is his opinion, of which I am right there in line with him, that the Electoral College ought to be done away with and that America should go to, as it does for every other election, a essentially popular vote only in order to determine the presidency of the United States. And he went through a list of reasons that he has, none of which I'll go into in detail here simply because of time interest. But essentially, his argument is whatever relevant role it might have played in the past, it is no longer a relevant issue, especially when you realize that five of the 45 presidencies have had a dubious linkage between the popular vote and the
Electoral
College.
Way to put it.
That a good way to put it?
Well, and it's something like, I think that means we have a 7% rate, where the person who is president lost the popular vote.
Yes.
So for you baseball fans out there, it would be the equivalent of something of your baseball team scoring more runs yet losing 10 games.
Who lost the World Series, by the way? No, we've already discussed that.
The Los Angeles Dodgers.
Good. And about the only way that could have been better if it had been the
New York Yankees?
Precisely. Yes.
But they and the Astros are in the same league, and you can't do that. So.
Yeah, but the Yankees lost, so it would have been a good thing. Yes. Yeah, a Dodgers-Yankees World Series would have had me like just not watching.
Exactly.
The baseball season would have ended. But yes, all kidding aside, you know, he is doing.
I'm very proud of him. Yeah. There actually is an effort by a number of states to do an end run around the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
excuse me. A number of states have signed a compact that once they get 270 electoral votes worth of states to sign on, then all of those states agree that they will award their electors to whoever wins the national popular vote. Now, the problem is all the low-hanging fruit has been picked. Now you got much tougher sells. Pennsylvania's had this on the state house docket for something like 6 months. I don't see it moving, but it's every year it gets introduced.
It would be nice.
It would.
So I did think that you would enjoy knowing what the...
I am proud of Moretti the Younger.
What thing one is doing, and
what would that make Nick though? Moretti the Youngerer,
Youngerer, yeah, sure, why not?
Works for me.
Look, as long as we agree that Nicole is the much better half,
yes,
and we agree that Nicole is the much better half.
I can honestly say I've never heard an argument otherwise.
Because there isn't one. At least there isn't a sane one. Okay.
Right.
All right. On to obviously important news of the week. And let's begin with one that seems to, at least at this point, show no signs of ending. And that is, and again, relating to the idea of crime and punishment, which is the theme of this podcast, let me rephrase the question instead of is. When do the sexual assault and sexual harassment claims or allegations or statements or charges or whichever term you want to use, when does it peak? Because at this point, it seems to show no sign of ending.
Well, and you know, our buddy, our pal, Michaeline Kane, 2 weeks ago, and I discussed this.
Mm-hmm.
So you can, for those of you who have archived these or have access to it, by all means, go back and check. I really have two distinct thoughts on this. On the one hand, I'm very happy it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
This has been swept under the rug for so long, to the agony of so many women and a few men. Let's be clear. This is not a monolithic entity.
But the overwhelming...
Oh, the overwhelming majority are women. Men. I'm just pointing out that
exactly.
It is... You know that there are always exceptions to every rule. So in that sense, it's good that it's coming out. However, with reference to the Kevin Spacey allegation by actor Anthony Rapp, who no one has any reason to disprove or disbelieve, I do have a question, though, because what is the objective?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what do the people who are bringing this stuff up, and I don't mean this in an accusatory way, it's an honest question, what do you hope to gain?
Mm-hmm.
Because Mr. Spacey, although he elected to come out while apologizing, which I thought was, how do I put this politely, not cool.
Yeah. And I have something to say about that in a minute, but go ahead.
Right. So suffice to say, not cool. But by the same token, he didn't deny it. He did apologize, and he did indicate that he was in an altered state when it happened. Now, that doesn't excuse it.
Mm-hmm.
But he said, and I also have no reason to disbelieve Mr. Spacey, he has no recollection of the incident while apologizing. So, okay, fine. But then his show goes off the air, and here's where I have the problem. Not so much because his starring role is coming to an end. Okay, fine. But there's a whole bunch of actors and actresses and production crew who now just lost their job.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's a hell of a lot of collateral damage.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess my question is, what are these people hoping for. Because there's been no indication, and again, please understand, I'm not trying to excuse anything.
Agreed.
But there's no indication that that sort of behavior was ever repeated again by Mr. Spacey. It might have been. I mean, yeah, if there's a serial case of offenses, Joss Whedon, then by all means,
Jerry
there should
Sandusky?
Be. Yeah, well, that's almost a completely different category. But, you know, at what point, I guess my question is there a statute of limitations? What is the appropriate punishment? I'm not saying I have the answers to these. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But it does cause me for, it gives me a little pause.
Mm-hmm.
Not that it should ever be covered up, by the way.
Yeah, I think, you know, in an attempt to address your question, I think there might be two objectives here.
Sure.
I think number one is to illustrate the, not only that this happened in Hollywood, but this right. happened in higher education, and this happens in business, and this right. happens in, you know,
politics.
You name the fields. And so right. there's probably not a field in which it does not take place.
Right. It's
or
a
career in which it doesn't take place. But, you know, I think what we're dealing with is, you know, as with so many other things, it took one or two people, and in this case, it was both of them were women, to have the courage to step forward and say, there is an evil man in Hollywood by the name of Harvey Weinstein who
right.
has who did something to me many, many years ago that should not have been done. And in many cases, it's not many, many years ago.
Well, right. I mean, up until very, very recently, there was almost a running joke in Hollywood.
So I think the first rationale is to demonstrate that Weinstein is not alone.
Correct.
That there are a lot of Weinsteins out there. Now, they may not be, there may not be the, you know, if he sexually harassed or worse 50 women and somebody else sexually harassed 10 women. You know, I'm not talking numbers here. I'm not doing
right. We're not reducing this to arithmetic.
I'm just saying it exists. So I think number one is to demonstrate that the problem exists and that it's corrosive and it has gone on for a long time.
Correct.
I also think to some extent that this stopped being public shaming a long time ago. And I think this is not about saying to Kevin Spacey, you know, you're a bad guy.
Shame on you, sir.
Right. I don't think this is public shaming. What I think it is that you were able to act in such a way for the longest time, knowing that there was going to be basically no retribution for what you did.
Correct.
And now the shoe's on the other foot. How does it feel?
Well, and more importantly, for men out there, and I'm not saying this is wrong. I'm saying this is a natural consequence. Including men who have done nothing wrong, you're just going to have to be very cognizant of your circumstances, of how you're acting. And, you know, if you accidentally say something that you can tell someone reacted poorly to, your best thing is to immediately apologize, say, you know, that was a dumb thing to say,
I'm sorry.
We've
all stuck our foot in our mouths.
Right. And at that point, it's over.
It's over.
But it does mean that that mostly men, overwhelmingly men, are just going to have to start being a lot more accountable for their actions.
And this is where what Kevin Spacey said just absolutely infuriated me. One of the reasons, corrosive as it is, one of the corrosive reasons that exists for this idea of not allowing gay men to adopt children is the idea that they're going to sexually assault them.
Right. And it's almost like he used his homosexuality as an excuse.
Precisely. And so what he has done is allowed a corrosive, it's not even a stereotype, but just a corrosive argument, which would, with very
propaganda,
little data.
Lie.
With very little data to support it. What he's essentially
By
done
the way, in this case, I think
say,
very little means zero.
May mean zero. But, you know, what he's essentially done is to say, well, you know, I mean, he's basically saying, if I wasn't gay, I wouldn't have done this. And that is...
Right. Either he's saying it or he phrased it in such a way that you could easily interpret that.
Exactly.
You know, I'm not going to try to get inside his head at this point, but either way, you have now compounded the error.
You know, and I know five men who are married to other men. And in one of the cases, they've adopted kids. And there is zero, zero, zero reason to fear that those children are in harm's way.
Oh, God, yes.
But for Kevin Spacey to equate pedophilia to homosexuality was a leap for which, to some extent, he ought to be excommunicated, for lack of a better phrase, in much the same way that Harvey Weinstein was.
So, okay, so just so I'm clear, you're advocating that basically he should never be able to work in this town again, to borrow the phrase.
I think that would be a perfectly acceptable crime, or not sanction, not a crime.
Punishment.
A perfectly acceptable punishment, because what the man has done is to stir up a pot that should not have been stirred up, you know, to begin with.
If he had left it at the apology and the circumstances underneath, that would have been fine.
Which are wishy-washy to begin with.
Well, right. Well, I'm not saying it's good, but I mean, at least there's something there.
Something there. Yes. Right. Yes. So, you know, I agree with you as we move on to the national issues of crime and punishment. I do agree with you that the idea of men being more careful is absolutely essential. But I also agree with the idea that we have seen, I think, a tipping point where women who were encouraged to come forward in the past, I think, are finally going to really know that a lot of mechanisms to support them are going to be in place.
And that's a good thing. I would like to add, just as an observation before we go on, with the canceling of his series House of Cards, I would like to point out that we are now holding a fictional president to a higher moral standard than our current one.
And that is a segue to Crime and Punishment Part 2. And as a reminder, you are listening to Episode 11 of Upon Further Review with
the Podcast Profs.
And he is
Dr. Soren Fanning, and you are
Dr. Anthony Moretti. And we are both at Robert Morris University.
And we are assisted.
We did not introduce the guy in our heads this week. John?
I'm silent today.
Yeah, unless
I have something of real interest.
See, it's always those quiet ones you got to worry about.
Well, he has like a natural camouflage.
Yes, he does. He does.
He just sort of blends into the foliage.
Yes, especially with the black computer screen and the black shirt he's wearing. He's, you know, you almost like, you
until
know,
we run until we run over on time.
Then the
that's why I'm camouflaged. So you don't know I'm coming. To cattle
exactly.
Prod you.
Exactly.
Then sister wrapping up. You know, and I had a few of those when I was in Catholic school way back when. All right, Crime and Punishment Part 2. We have seen the first indications of how Robert, don't call me Mueller, is going to conduct this investigation of whatever exists between Russia and the Trump campaign. And it seems to be the very standard modus operandi of begin with the lower level.
Use little fish to get big fish.
The big fish. Use those who are at lower levels of employment or prestige or power, and don't even necessarily get them for what they might have done with the Russians, but get them on some other things that therefore allows you to put pressure on them. So let's begin with George Papadopoulos. And I think
Papadopoulos.
That's it. That too.
A name that is absurdly fun to say.
Yes. Now, his claim to fame prior to this week,
he had no claim to fame.
It was nothing.
Which, by the way, we learned that Bob Mueller can keep a secret.
Yes. Now, what makes what Mr. Papadopoulos is doing important?
Okay. So, a couple things. So, the first formal indictments were levied against Paul Manafort, who was the Trump election campaign's manager from March through August of 2016.
And we have more to say about
and his,
him.
And his lieutenant, Rick Gates, specifically Rick Gates III. George Papadopoulos was a member of the Trump campaign's foreign policy team. And he was arrested back in July, and nobody knew about this. And it was just simply revealed on Monday that he has been, and I'm going to quote directly here, a proactive cooperating witness.
And in the legal community, that the FBI exists.
It is exceedingly.
What does that mean?
It means it's exceedingly likely he's been wearing a wire since July 27th.
Whoops.
Yeah, so I'm sure in some certain corridors of power, that sound you hear is people breaking into a flop sweat right now.
Mm-hmm. Now, why is he, or why is his decision to plead guilty important?
Well, he pled guilty to a lesser charge, making false statements to the Federal Bureau of Investigation. It's important because, first of all, we have our first guilty plea in the Russia interfering in the 2016 election charge. So that's significant in and of itself. So we have the first guilty plea. We now know for a fact that on March 31st of last year, of 2016, that Mr. Papadopoulos, in a meeting with then-candidate Donald Trump Sr., he proposed setting up a meeting between Mr. Trump and Vladimir Putin, and that the reaction of Mr. Trump was one of interest, not, shut up, kid, get out of here.
This wasn't just our buddy Vladimir wants to say hello to you after not talking to you for a couple of years. This
Correct.
Was a specific purpose for this meeting.
Because by this point, they had been informed through Russian intermediaries that Russian intelligence services had breached the Democratic National Committee's email system, as well as those belonging to then former Secretary Hillary Rodham Clinton.
Now, remind ourselves again that should you ever get a phone call from somebody who says, hey, I've got information from the Russians that can help you win a presidential election, the first person you should call is your local FBI office and say, I just got a phone call that you and I need to have a discussion about because somebody is trying to do something illegal.
Well, bear in mind, we have precedent on this. Back in 2000, the election campaign for then Vice President Al Gore received in the mail anonymously debate materials that could have only come from then Governor George W. Bush's campaign. The very first call that was made, and by very first, I mean within seconds, was to the FBI, and the material was passed on without ever having been opened. So there, this is not top secret stuff. This is common knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
So we know for a fact that now, not once but twice, the Trump campaign has actively solicited illegally gained materials from the Russian Federation.
Mm-hmm.
That is the definition of collusion.
Mm-hmm. Despite the fact that the president of the United States says it is not. So, Mr. Papadopoulos has done what is probably the smart thing.
Right.
And has said, you know what? If I'm going to prison, I want to go to prison for as few days or months or weeks as possible.
Right. And maybe try to start to put right what you clearly put wrong.
Paul Manafort has a bit of a problem beyond just the legal machinations he's in. Did you know he is the owner of more than one passport?
Oh, yes. He has three passports.
Why is that a problem?
Well, it makes him a flight risk, for one thing.
Right.
I mean, when you're charged with, and by the way, whichever way he slices it, he's in trouble because one of the big charges, of course, is tax evasion. Once you get the IRS on your tail for tax evasion, you're going down.
Just ask Al Capone. Well, you can't ask Al Capone. He's no longer with us.
Right.
But, you know.
I can only presume that the ghost of Al Capone is still being sued by the IRS to this day. But now, on the one hand, Manafort has no reason to cooperate, mainly because he's almost certainly going to be pardoned by the president.
Mm-hmm.
But because he will still face state charges from New York, he will still have his Fifth Amendment privilege. I think the arrest of Manafort wasn't to get information. It was to send a message that, hey, there are real criminal results of this investigation. It's not a witch hunt. But also to send a message to everyone else around the president of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, now understand, what we know about the investigation, what Mueller knows, is the barest tip of the iceberg. No one had heard of George Papadopoulos until Monday.
Mm-hmm.
This is where, now I'm reading tea leaves a little bit. This is where I find it fascinating that the one name you heard nothing about was Mike Flynn.
Mm-hmm.
He might as well have dropped off the planet.
Or he, too, has pled guilty and is being wired up as we speak, so to speak.
Bear in mind, let's go back to the heady days of March when he was initially fired from his job. Remember, 1 week later, remember what his lawyer said? Mm-hmm. He was willing to trade testimony for immunity.
Mm-hmm.
We know he was already angling for this. Since that occurrence at the end of March, he has vanished.
Yes.
Almost as if he's gone into witness protection.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know for a fact that this is happening. This is just what it looks like.
With the couple minutes we have left, this is what I think is coming next. I think.
Sure.
And again, we're all guilty of reading tea leaves here. Presuming there are more indictments to come, and I think
there are
more indictments to come. I don't think there's any question about it. My sense is that as far as Donald Trump is concerned, if it's Paul Manafort, if it's Mike Flynn, if it is darn near anybody who is not a blood relative or married to a blood relative, Jared Kushner, I think to some extent this president is going to continue to pass it off as fake news.
Well, I think the next round of indictments, which will probably happen, Feliz Navidad, around Christmas, I think Mueller's going to go to Jared.
And here is
Don Jr.
Yeah. And here is where it gets tricky, because Jared Kushner, like the man or dislike the man, Jared Kushner has a very strong relationship with the state of Israel.
Indeed.
Is it conceivable that Jared Kushner essentially hops on an airplane, gets the heck out of here, goes to Israel?
We have extradition treaties with Israel.
Will Israel follow through with it? Is there any reason for the state of Israel to follow through with an extradition?
Absolutely there is. Donald Trump is not going to be president of the United States indefinitely.
Sure, but Israel and the United States has a very strong relationship with each other. If he flees the country, what is to keep him from being forced to come back?
What on earth would... What's the benefit to Israel?
He's a friend of Israel's.
U.S. is a bigger friend of Israel's.
True. I'm just wondering, in other words, you and I joked whether or not Mike Flynn would hightail it to Russia and seek
asylum
there. It is not inconceivable, I think, to see Jared Kushner do it, except and unless Ivanka says to him, you go, you're on your own, I'm not leaving.
And even possibly then,
you know, so we will see. The bottom line in all of this, the indictments are not over.
Oh, no. And by the way, there's one thing that bears repeating in all this. The president of the United States, as far as I can tell, just based on publicly known information, is guilty on two counts of obstruction of justice.
Mm-hmm.
One for the firing.
Well, he's not been found guilty yet.
He hasn't been found guilty yet, but
could
be charged with and easily convicted on two counts. One, the firing of FBI Director James Comey, because he admitted on nationally broadcast television that he did it to shut down the Russia investigation.
Mm-hmm.
But the other one is he was the one who drafted Don Jr.'s
letter.
Intentionally misleading statement.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, more are coming. This is going, by the way, it was 17 months from the appointment of a special prosecutor in 1996 to the first indictments in the Whitewater investigation into Bill Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
It took Nixon 2 years to get the first indictments. This is five months. This is ridiculously fast paced,
which suggests there's a lot of stuff out there and there's a lot of stuff more.
I think Mueller has the best problem any prosecutor could have. He's drowning in information.
Before we wrap up, we have to announce our special podcast next week.
Yes, you're going to get us a little bit early next
week.
Yes,
we're going to do two shows next week. Special and a Thursday special.
Poor me.
Yeah, well, I'm
on Tuesday. Yes.
Well, this is why they pay you the big bucks. Oh, wait.
On Tuesday, we are celebrating or recognizing or bemoaning, observing the 100th anniversary of the great Russian Revolution.
Indeed, the fall one, not the first one.
The disaster of communism to Russia and Eastern Europe.
And we are going to be looking, or sort of autopsying, if you will.
Well, we are doctors.
Not that kind, though. But it's a historical autopsy, so it works.
Ah, okay.
But we are going to look back at the 75-year life of the Soviet Union. What is its final legacy? That sort of thing. And we will be in what is going to be the horribly misnamed quiet study room of the RMU library.
You should join us Tuesday at 11 a.m. At the library, and then join us again next Thursday here when we will do our usual celebration of the fact that the Dodgers... No. We'll do our usual podcast here. So, he is Soren Fanning. I am Anthony Moretti. The voice in our head is John Roland over there, who is remaining quite silent.
Although I see the cattle prod, so we got to get moving.
We got to get out of here. This wraps up episode 11 of Upon Further Review with...
The Podcast Profs.
See you Tuesday. Come on!